Asker International School opened its doors in 2013 with just 35 students. Today, we have almost 400. We're still a small school, but with a big voice. This is our podcast, Uplift Ed. I'm your host, Mr. Mark, welcoming you to the first ever edition of Uplift Ed, a podcast created by Asker International School for anyone passionate about pedagogy. In this episode, I am joined by Matthew to chat about the introduction of iTime into the Grade 2 learning environment. Matthew is a former journalist who's taught in two international schools and has a passion for all things inquiry. Good morning, Matthew. Now, I'm guessing iTime isn't another Apple product. So, what is it?
So, iTime is something we've recently introduced into Grade 2. It's one period a week when the students have time to inquire into their own questions. So it's a personal inquiry. It's an opportunity for every student to investigate, explore, research a passion of their own. And it will be based around their own questions.
So how is this any different to the Genius Hour, which was influenced by Google's commitment to giving its employees 20% of their time to work on their own project?
I don't know a lot about the Genius Hour or Google's project, but I read a little bit about it in Kath Murdoch's book, The Power of Inquiry, and I think there are a lot of similarities. I think in some schools they will even call it Genius Hour or Oasis Time. And I think the concept is the same whether you're working at Google or you're in a school doing an iTime. It's actually perhaps we can get some of the best things from our students when they're given the ownership, when they're given the agency to choose for themselves. So I think with the example of Google, they've obviously realized that by giving their employees this time to look at their own projects, some of those employees have developed some of the most interesting, most useful apps and have taken the company forward in such a way that they've seen that it's valuable. And I think we see some of the same things happening in our classroom. So when students are given the ownership and given the chance to lead their own inquiries, it has a knock-on effect also on some of their other learning in a very positive way.
So you've talked quite a lot there about the benefits of the strategy to the students. I'm just wondering, you know, what are the challenges and the pitfalls about implementing this approach?
Yeah, as with any other kind of teaching and learning, there are a lot of challenges. I've tried to see every challenge that we have also as an opportunity for learning. So, for example, one challenge we have in our classroom, a lot of the students want to research with tablets or Chromebooks or laptops. We've got 10 that work in our classroom, and we've got 20 students. Then there is immediately a question of, okay, who gets to use those? How do we share them? And then I think this is actually, okay, you can see it as a challenge, or you can see here's a learning opportunity. Let's talk about how we share the resources we have in the classroom. How can we use these things in a fair way? Like, do we need to research all the time on a tablet? Are there other resources that we can use? And I think what we see over time is that the students make better choices and are more open-minded towards each other, and they're more self-aware of themselves as a learner, that perhaps sitting on the tablet for the whole 45 minutes isn't the best use of their time. And now it's much less of a problem than, say, in the first week when we started doing it.
Well, you will have those critics, just as you just said, about a child sitting on their iPad or laptop for 45 minutes, pretty much maybe doing nothing. And I'm just wondering, from your experience, how you've overcome that, or how you've seen the children overcome that particular part.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of misconceptions about inquiry-based learning in general. And particularly with free inquiry, it's important, as Trevor McKenzie says, it's not free time. It's not just do whatever you want. There is a structure to it. And one of the best things that we've done in grade two is actually my colleague, Ms. Hassini, came up with a basic template that gives us some accountability with the students. They have to write down clearly what their key questions are that they're researching before they begin their research. And then we as teachers use the iTime to meet with each student individually. We have like a mini conference with them, and we hold them accountable to what they said that they're doing. So we'll ask them, okay, what questions are you researching? How are you researching it? How are you going to present your learning to others? When are you going to do that? And during the course of that iTime, we might meet with five or six students. But then the next week we'll meet with a different set of students. Of course, there's always going to be, you know, one or two students who perhaps do use that time unwisely. But then we're also like keeping our eyes on the classroom and using that again as opportunity to go and speak with that student. Okay, what is it you're looking at on YouTube? Is that something that is helping you to learn? And getting them to reflect themselves on how they're using the time, and keeping them accountable with what they've said that they're going to do. And again, generally, I would say it sounds to a lot of people like chaos, 27-year-olds like researching whatever they want. But I would invite anyone into our classroom and come and see the learning that's taking place, to take a look at the kinds of questions they're researching, and then come and have a look at how each student then is presenting what they've found out to their classmates, and see that actually it's very effective and overall, I think, a really positive thing to the school.
Yeah, I just wonder sometimes when teachers consider or are worried about these approaches, whether it's their need to have control over the class rather than hand the control to the students. It's more about what their own anxieties and their own fears, as opposed to what the students really need and what they really can do.
Yeah, and I think I would say I myself have been on a similar journey. It's certainly not the way that I first started teaching, and it's not the way we started the year. At the start of the year, we had a lot more structured inquiry, and over the course of our units of inquiry, we've tried to hand over ownership to the students and release agency, rather than just giving them free-for-all from the start. We've tried to give them the skills beforehand so that when it came to having an eye time, that they were really ready to do that. I think also for myself, I'm kind of on my own eye time, in that the management of the school gave me the opportunity to go on a course that was all about inquiry, to try different things that I wanted to do, and I would say have a look at the impact that that's had perhaps on my own class, on the learning that's happening in our classrooms, and also with other teachers. Have I been able to pass on some of the things that I've been learning? And I think we see that with other teachers too. Perhaps they have a particular passion. One of our colleagues last week was sharing his passion for the power of reading. And in a way, I see that as like another teacher on their own iTime, who's able to then come and share with all of us. And I see that this is like really effective across our staff as well, as our students.
That's lovely to hear. We are an IB school, so I'm just wondering if you can give me some clarity or some information on how this fits in with the PYP framework.
I think it fits in brilliantly with the PYP framework, and especially the developments that I see with the IB in terms of wanting to give the students more ownership, wanting to constantly encourage them to pursue meaningful learning, and learning that's connected to the real world, and learning that's going to help them to be lifelong learners. And I think if you look down the line, you know, when you're at university, perhaps you get opportunity to research into a particular field that you yourself have chosen. What we're doing is we're kind of putting the steps back and going, why aren't we having that kind of education earlier on? Why does it always have to be what the teacher says? I think we're also in a very different world than perhaps when we were at school. Things like Google, YouTube just didn't exist when I was at school. But now, you know, all these students, these things are bread and butter. They're normal parts of everyday life. I think the IB is really aware of these kind of things. And I think the other thing that's really great is to see all of the skills that we're developing during the I time are relevant to all of the other areas of learning that we have in the units of inquiry that, you know, we frame in the IB curriculum. For example, if you have a unit, one really good example actually is two girls in our class. They weren't at our school in grade one, so they never did a unit of inquiry about space. And that's actually the topic that they're really interested in now, because they're aware that everyone else in their class knows quite a lot about space and they themselves don't. We're not going to say, okay, you should start the school in grade one. And when they join the school, we're going to say, okay, you joined the school in grade two and now here's your units of inquiry. But here's a great opportunity for them to find out a lot of things that maybe they didn't get because they weren't at the school in grade one. That they can maybe even visit the grade one class and find out about that. They can ask their classmates. They can use some of the tools that we have in the school to research those things. Having the iTime also helps us during the units of inquiry when questions and inquiries pop up that maybe aren't specifically relevant to that topic or that concept. So at the moment, our unit of inquiry is all about states of matter. We're doing lots of science experiments to find out about solids, liquids, and gases. What do you do with a student who is desperate to learn about dinosaurs and constantly wants to ask questions about dinosaurs? You can try and make some connections to states of matter, but they're going to be quite tenuous. Whereas if you can give them a specific time, okay, here's a time when you can go and research about dinosaurs, what you tend to find is those questions don't... You're giving a channel for those questions to be answered and explored.
So what I'm hearing is that you've got this fantastic pocket of practice in the Grade 2 classroom. But in Asker International School, you don't move with the children, so you'll receive a whole new... bunch of grade 2 students next year. I'm just wondering how this autonomy and this independence is developed when they go to their next group of teachers or set of teachers in grade 3.
Yeah, I think that's a really valuable question. I think one of the things that we've tried to do in grade 2 is we've tried to share the things that we're doing with the other grades and also invite them in to come and see what we're doing and maybe take some inspiration from that and see, okay, how does it look in grade one even? Is there anything that we could do that's similar there? But I think if you look further up the school when you get to grade 5 and the exhibition, for example, it's not so different. There you've got students who are all pursuing individual lines of inquiry. And what I see is what we're doing in grade 2 is we're one of the stepping stones towards the grade 5 exhibition. And I think the team here at Asker in grade 3, grade 4, grade 5 are aware of that too, and they're also trying to, you know, be part of the building blocks towards grade 5. I would hope to see that over the years we can grow and develop these kinds of things and maybe see, okay, what would an iTime look like in grade 3 or grade 4. I also think some of the teachers who teach in those grades do notice how empowered these grade 2 students are when they come out and how aware they are of themselves as learners and how engaged they are in the units of inquiry. So I think they're already seeing some of the effects that we're having.
And finally, what practical tips would you give to any teacher or educator who's thinking about employing iTime in their classroom?
Yeah, first of all, I would recommend doing some reading up on it. If you like reading books, the Inquiry Mindset book by Trevor McKenzie, The Power of Inquiry by Kath Murdoch, or just going on Kath Murdoch's blog are probably great places to start to get inspired. I've also found connecting with other teachers on Twitter and getting some ideas of what other people are doing was really helped me to visualize and see, okay, what will it actually look like in the classroom. I would also advise, you know, not going on a big pendulum shift and suddenly, you know, making your whole week an iTime. Start with a small step like we've done. Okay, just take one 45 minute lesson a week and start with that and see how it goes. Just like with all of our practice, I think the best thing we can do is to give things a try and then at the end reflect, okay, what effect did this have? What went well? What could I do better next time? Is there some way that I could do this better if I had an assistant in the room or another teacher who could come and help? You know, maybe invite other teachers in and say, could you just look at and see what some of these students are doing whilst I'm with this group, and just make sure that they are on task. I think these are the kind of things we could do with any new thing that we're trying to introduce.
Matthew, thank you for contributing to the first ever episode of Uplift Ed. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show, and I'm really looking forward to hearing more in the future about how iTime develops in Asker International School.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure for me too.
Uplift Ed is an Asker International School production, a small school with a big voice. Thank you for listening.